Our podcast will begin in just a moment. Our podcast production and distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. We want you to know about KPP Financial's investment programs, so we posted complete information including investment minimums and program goals and risk levels. All the details are there when you're ready to take a look on investtalk.com. Just click on the Investments tab. End of commercial, and now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition, June 23rd, 2016 of Invest Talk. I appreciate you being with me. And of course, we're all about above average investing for the average investor. Manage your money is difficult. It is a handful. It is stressful. It can be rewarding, but I would describe it more as a difficult difficult thing to do, to learn, to continue to adjust. And many folks, maybe you find it enjoyable. I do. And especially if you realize some success, it's pretty rewarding when that happens. The people who are really successful do it because they want the challenge. I love the challenge. I think it's a lot of fun. And of course, you have to embrace it. You have to, you enjoy your victories. You're really happy. And of course, just like anything else, when you lose or you have a problem, you're bad at Patrick. Of course, you are disappointed. So, but you have to have a good attitude. What is your attitude about managing money? As we know, the baby boomers, my generation, as they get closer and closer into retirement, many of them are entering, thousands a day now, entering retirement, the Social Security system is going to get more strained, and the generation following is going to be concerned, right? So growing and managing wealth for those generations, is going to be extremely important. The baby boomer generation has not saved enough, put enough away into retirement accounts. They don't have enough. So Social Security is going to be something they're going to lean on. And the next generation, the generation after that, are going to be very stressed out about, is Social Security going to be there? It will be there, but is it going to be there in the same form? Probably not. They're going to have to charge more money. They're going to have to increase salary, probably going to increase retirement age. It's going to be different. So you really got to work on gathering and managing your own money. Take responsibility. And whether you're going to do it yourself or have a professional help you with it, it doesn't matter. You still have to do it. You got to protect and grow the money. You have to have the money work for you instead of you working for it. And prudent money management is a skill. And it's always being refined. Nothing stays the same. And if you're honest with yourself, and every professional money manager out there, if they're honest with themselves, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody. You make mistakes and you miss opportunities. Happens all the time. That's part of the whole system of investing. There's a lot of complexity and a lot of pitfalls. And, we talk about how you can protect yourself by proper diversification and not buy too much of any one thing or any one sector. Even if you think it's going to be the best in the world, it's still prudent not to overinvest. Be very careful because you are managing a portfolio. You're not just managing a stock. If you want to roll the dice, buy a huge growing stock and roll the dice. But that's not proper money management, and it may lose you a lot of money. And in the end, I was talking to my wife today, and I say, the worst thing that can happen to gamblers is that they can be successful. Now, I'm not talking about the professional gambler. I'm talking about the gambler that's just a regular schmo like myself or anybody else. Because if you get successful at the beginning, you think you're smarter than everybody else, and you think you continue to do it. And for gamblers, it's constantly losing money, and they eventually go broke. In investing, if you think, I bought this penny stock and did really well with it, you think every penny stock is going to be that way, so you think you're an expert and you're going to do it. So being successful on an individual stock, being hugely successful on an individual stock, can be a problem if you're not careful with it, because it's unusual. It's like winning the lottery. How often that's going to happen? So you got to learn different things. Learn economics. You got to learn technical analysis. You got to analyze the securities that you're considering, the industry that you're considering. You need to do some research. Look for a profitable business worthy of your investment dollars, and you need the time to do it. Understand what's up, what's the big picture, what's happening there. It's all difficult. I love it. I enjoy it. So it's not difficult as far as putting in the time because I enjoy it so much. But if you don't, that's why you hire people like me. You hopefully hire somebody who will do it. But if you enjoy it, you can learn it and you can do it. You can do it. We're here to provide some perspective and to answer your money questions. As you know, you can reach me right now at our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART. It's open. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. That means we're live right now. So let's go ahead and answer a question.
Hey, guys. Calling from Seattle. I appreciate the show. I look forward to your newsletters every Friday. Just had a pretty basic question. I'm fairly new to investing. Only been doing it for a couple years now. And I had a question. You always say no more than 5% of your portfolio per stock. Now, would that include ETFs? Because right now I'm running basically an all ETF portfolio, and I have more like 20% per ETF. I have like a large cap, a small cap, an emerging market, a large cap dividend paying ETF, and a REIT ETF. So I have pretty much 20% in each of those. But since they're so diversified per ETF, is that kind of okay to be that heavy in each ETF? Would appreciate any advice. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great day.
Well, yes, you can have much more in an ETF than an individual stock because of the diversification. Now, I might have a bit more than 20%. In other words, you only have 5 ETFs. I might have a bit more. I might be more comfortable with maybe 8 or 10 ETFs, you know, to get a bit more diversified. But no, and it depends on which ETF, because if you have ETF, the S&P 500, well, there's 500 stocks you own. So you could have 50% of that, and I wouldn't have a problem with it because it's 500 different stocks. But if you have an ETF, like you mentioned, REIT, 20% in a REIT seems a little high to me. I would have no more than maybe 10%, maybe 12% in a REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust ETF, because it's pretty narrow. I know you like the income, and that's probably why you took it, but it's pretty narrow. And when you're managing a portfolio of ETFs, which are a few of them, then you have to start to understand what sectors you're in and what drives those sectors. Okay, because most ETFs, you know, are sector specific, and you have a broader ETF like the S&P 500. You know, there's broader ones, Russell 2000, you know, and therefore you can have more money in those broader ones, but some of them get pretty narrow. Depends on how you want to manage that ETF portfolio. So the more sector specific of an ETF, I would have it less, maybe 8 to 10% of that ETF in a very sector specific that I think is going to work. The broader ETFs, I have no problem. You can have 100% in an S&P 500 ETF. I would not say that's a bad thing. Over long haul, that will work. Good question. Very good question. Keep an eye on expense ratios can pay off in the long run. How to keep more of your ETF gains. That's going to be our main talking point today. I also want to talk about 4 things that will drive stocks. What are the 4 things that will drive stocks now? Now, what will drive them up? Break those highs we're near. 50% of all high-paying jobs require this knowledge. What is it? 50%. I'm not just talking about knowledge of, you know, how to work a computer. That's probably about 100% of the jobs these days. But 50% of all high-paying jobs require this knowledge. We're going to talk about that. And what is the VIX telling us? The VIX, the volatility index, the fear gauge. What has it been telling us recently in the last week or two? I'm going to kind of analyze it a little bit and see if we can't ferret out what it's trying to tell us. Those are going to be the talking points today. Today, the market had a big up day. Dow was up 230 points, the NASDAQ up 77, and the S&P up 28. So it's getting back close to where it was a few weeks ago, back near the highs for the year. And it was all today it was based on because there was optimism about the vote on the Brexit, or Britain leaving the EU. And the optimism is that they won't leave the EU. The market likes the fact that they won't. And just before on air, I think it was 50-48, 50% to 48%, 50% staying, 48% leaving. But we've got hours and hours of vote counting to do. So that was the exit poll. And what was interesting, I read that this morning, that the networks or the British television, BBC, whoever, didn't hire pollsters to find out what was happening. You know, like here in the United States, every 3 seconds, as soon as the polls close, every three votes is counted, and pollsters telling you who's winning by what percentage. Well, in Britain, they didn't hire anybody. But some of the big money houses hired a pollster or two to find out how they're voting. We're going to find out sometime in the middle of the night tonight. That's when it'll be noticed, but whether Britain is going to stay in the EU or are they going to leave. There's a lot of fear mongering. You ever notice politics is all about fear? About if they leave, the world is going to fall apart, the sky is going to fall. And that would not be true, but there was a lot of that. Good information is key to your investing success, but you don't have all the time in the world to gather it. Join up and become an InvestTalk Insider. We have a whole library of info sheets, one-page treatments of important money topics that you can read. You can sign up for free and get instant access. Just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
Hey, Steve. Good morning. This is Raj. Thanks for the show. I am learning a lot. I'm a beginning investor. And I would like to get your opinion on this stock, ATW, it's Atwood Oceanics. It's a oil stock. So I have some amount that I would like to invest in it for long term. And I'm wondering if it's a good time to get in. Thanks for the show. And bye.
Okay, this is Atwood Oceanics, Inc. It is a small company, $859 million in market cap. That's small. Anything under $1 billion is small. Anything under $500 million is almost micro cap. Engaged in international offshore contract drilling and completion of exploration and developmental oil and gas wells. So it's going to make $4.53 a share this year, and you'll say, and it's a $13 stock, and you'll look at it and say, man, that is just great. That's making a ton of money. But next year it's going to lose 32 cents a share. See, this is where the problem comes in. Is that loss of money? Why would it lose in 2017 32 cents a share when oil has now rebounded now? So you look at it today and they say, hey, that PE is like 3 PE. Based on last year's number, it was less than 2. They made $7.59. This year they're going to make $4.43. But next year they're going to lose 32 cents. See, so it's in the wrong direction. It looks like it put a bottom in around $5 to $6, and today it's at 13. And that bottom was at the beginning of the year, and it's been slowly creeping up. So it's moving, the stock price is moving in the right direction. The five-year PE ratio is 1 to 12. That's pretty low. Even the 12 is low. Return on equity is very good at 18%. Cash flow is very high. They're losing sales the last two quarters. And of course, before that, they were always gaining. It's a high-risk play, but if you're going to buy it, this is the area that you would buy it. I would not buy it. But if this is, you know, from a technical point of view, it just broke above its 200-day moving average with a little bit of gusto, so you go ahead and buy it. Now, how do you manage fear and learn how to manage risk? You read, you listen, you gain a perspective. That's how. And you ask questions. We're here to help. 888-99-CHART is how you reach me right now on our 24 hours, 7 days a week listener line. We're going to talk to Richard in Oakland next, and then you. Okay, let's start off by going to Richard in Oakland. How are you doing, Richard?
I'm good, good. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you. So I got a question. I know you're talking about stocks and investing heavy. Back about January, February last year, I had switched jobs. So I had rolled over half of my my 401k into a different company.
Okay.
And then I invested into a brokerage, about $100,000 of that money in the different stocks, ones like Walmart, right. Bayer, American Express. Now, I bought these in at a really low price. In fact, they were trading at their all-time low when I got into them. So I'm making a significant, almost a 15% increase across the board as a whole.
Right.
Some of them, like Walmart now, are nearly their high. Do you think I should be, stop gambling in some of that and selling off on some of the ones once they reach back to their highs?
Well, what you just described on the three stocks you had, they're pretty much core holdings. Walmart, I mean, that's a core holding. And when I say core holding, Richard, that means you kind of hold on to these things forever, because,
okay.
Walmart is going to be around forever, and they pay a pretty decent dividend. You picked it up at a low price. Even at today's price, it's 2.8% dividend yield. So you're probably getting close to 3% on the dividend. And so now, the trick is you should have a number of those core holdings, and they still should not be, more than 5% of your portfolio. They still shouldn't. So if you have, if it's 10% or 15% of your portfolio, what you do is you start cutting it back. You don't cut it all, but you start cutting it back and buying another one or hold the cash, looking for another opportunity. One of Warren Buffett's one of the ways that he is so successful is he doesn't feel like he's in a rush to invest all the cash he has. He waits. He'll wait for years, for a Walmart to drop to a very low price or, something that's really solid. And then he'll go buy as much as he wants to buy. And so that's kind of the key. If you feel you're not diversified enough, you only have maybe a handful, then those success ones, you start cutting back. And so you can go look for some other handful of more successful until you get a pretty decent diversified portfolio. That's a one way you can do it and still be doing it the right way.
Can I ask one more question on that?
Sure.
I did that, and I did just recently buy a few more. One was SGY, Stone Energy,
mm-hmm.
And I had gotten into ORIG, Ocean Rig Underwater, when they were down at their lowest point. So they're coming back, but Stone Energy is kind of worrying me. What do you think of them?
Well, I would worry about Stone Energy, SGY, simply because their sales are shrinking 40, 45, 46% in the last two quarters each. And they're going to lose $22 a share this year. They lost $5 a share last year, and they're going to lose $15 a share next year. That's a pretty hefty loss, and the stock is $8.78. That would kind of worry me. If they survive, it'll be a big winner for you because the stock is $8.78.
Wow.
The question is, can they survive? They still have a big cash flow, so they have heft. I'd take a look at their debt. If they have a ton of debt, I'd probably exit it. I wouldn't want to hold on to that debt. Richard, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Will, San Diego. How you doing, Will?
Oh, pretty good, Steve.
Thanks for holding on.
Yes, I'm looking at a real estate investment trust, ticker symbol LHO, and it pays a decent dividend,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but I want to know if the basic stock itself is worth looking at.
Yes, it looks pretty solid. This is LHO, LaSalle Hotel Properties, everybody. Out of Bethesda, Maryland. It's a REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust, that invests in upscale luxury full-service hotels consisting of 47 properties in 17 states across the U.S. So you can look at all 47 properties and see if you like where they are. It's not that hard. They're going to make $3.01 this year. They're going to make $2.96 or 98 cents next year. So, they're going to peak out about $3 a share, paying a 7.4% dividend yield. It's a $24 stock and paying 90% of that in the form of a dividend, 90% of the earnings. And it looks like that they should be able to maintain that dividend. And the PE ratio is pretty darn low. Sales is growing slowly. So I kind of like it. I think this is a good place. It's not going to double and triple on you. But when they're paying 7% dividend, it looks like they can continue to do so. As long as we don't go into recession, I think you've got a pretty good stock there.
Great. Okay? Thanks a lot. That's what I wanted to hear.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Jay in Florida, could you hold on till after? I am so sorry, but yeah, I got to take the break, but you'll be first up, I promise, Jay, so hold on. Now's the time to call with your questions or share your investing experience. I would love for you to do that. You can call our anytime line and record your question at 888-99-CHART, or you can send me a note to me directly if you like. Click on Contact Steve at investtalk.com.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. In case we haven't mentioned it, KPP Financial serves clients all across the U.S. If you'd like to have Steve review your retirement portfolio personally, no cost or obligation, you'll be ahead of the game. Steve carves out a few hours each month to meet with our podcast subscribers on Skype or telephone. It can be a very educational hour. To set up a time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab, and then portfolio review. You're listening to Invest Talk, and Steve is ready for your call this afternoon. It's your chance to ask a money manager about today's market, your investments, the future. Call 888-99-CHART to join us on the program live 4 to 5. And now, once again, here's Steve Peasley.
888-99-CHART. Jay, thank you. Jay, Florida, thank you for holding on. I appreciate it, Jay.
Sure. You know, I love your practical approach to the market and money management.
Thank you.
And I just want to ask you, yes, sir. It's true. Now, I just want to ask you a general question.
Sure.
For a young investor like myself, mm-hmm. would you think it's prudent to have a Roth IRA and also a normal trading account, or do you think it's just, you know, you should have one or the other? And I'll just take take it off the air. Let's see.
Sure, Jay, no problem. Notice he qualified that saying young. For a young investor, I like Roths. I like Roths a lot. Why? Well, I've mentioned it before. You're probably going to work someplace where you're going to get a 401k. And these days, there's Roth 401ks and regular 401ks, but most likely you're going to have a regular 401k in today's environment at work. And if you're young, a Roth gets to grow all that time tax-free. Of course, you're putting in after-tax dollars. I understand that. But the younger you are, the more years it can grow tax-free when you start taking out. And in a Roth, you never have to start taking it out at any age. A regular IRA, sure, you get the tax advantage now, the year you put the money in. That's, you know, before tax dollars. So if you in your tax return, you get to say, well, I had a income of $80,000, but I opened up a regular IRA for $5,000. So you're only taxed on $75,000. So you get whatever tax you on the $5,000 you paid, you get it back. But the growth, even though it grows not tax-free, a regular IRA or 401k, when you start taking out, you're taxed on every dime you take out, and it goes to your income. It goes to income tax, whatever tax bracket you're in. And hopefully when you're older, that'll be a low tax bracket. That's the hope. And you also have to start taking out at age 70 and a half. Say the year you turn age 70 and a half, you have to start taking required minimum distributions from a regular IRA or regular 401k. So those are the benefits and the detriments. So the older you are, you know, the less time you have to grow a Roth investment, it doesn't look as good. Younger, looks better. Should you have both? I kind of like both. Yeah, I don't, doesn't necessarily, you can, you know, don't not invest. What's your maximum? $5,000 in a Roth, and let's say you can put $10,000 away, and you can only put $5,000 in a Roth. The other $5,000 you can invest in a regular trading account. Depends on what your personal, situation is. Appreciate the call. Good question. That's a good question here, people. Appreciate that. Do you think England's going to leave the EU? We'll know sometime tonight. What's the odds? I think it's a coin toss, really. I really do. Okay, let's talk about expense ratios and costs, ETF. You know, like any mutual fund, the less you pay in expense ratios, the more you get to put in your pocket. And ETFs have one of the largest ranges of expense ratios out there, more than mutual funds. Well, not more than hedge funds, but usually more than mutual funds. Saying that they have very, very low-cost ETFs and very, very high-cost ETFs. And, of course, the low-cost ETFs are probably going to be your normal S&P 500 funds, you know, something that there's very little trading to do, very little thinking to do, very little effort by the fund manager. And that is all true. And, you know, you can get them really, really low. Vanguard generally has the lowest ones out there, but there's others that are lower. I know Schwab has a very low total market fund out there. But do you know there is an ETF that charges like 9.5% fee, annual fee? 9.5%. 9.45%. Okay, and you'll say, well, who would ever buy that? Believe it or not, they're totally justified. Okay, it's the VanEck Vector BDC Income, which is, you know, which what they're trying to do. That, I know it sounds crazy, that 9%, I know that. But it's really not, because this is like a, you know, they invest in startup companies, and they're passing along costs, is what they're doing. I mean, that's most of that 9% is cost, not their annual fee necessarily, but cost by the companies they've been investing in. So the bottom line here is you really have to understand what your ETF is investing in, and does that justify the cost of the trading fee? Not the annual fee. And you do realize that every ETF, every mutual fund, has an annualized fee that the fund managers charge. Every one of them. You can't get away from it. It's just how much you're going to have to pay. Okay, so just pay attention. Some of them are totally justified. Some of them are not. The more esoteric, the more exotic the ETF is, the higher the annual fee is going to be. Okay, just the way it works. Just expect it. And hopefully they're worth it. You know, in many ways, diversifying your portfolio might be worth it. Let's go to Gene in North Carolina. How you doing, Gene?
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Steve.
Thank you.
You were just talking about the advantages of a Roth IRA.
Yes.
And I was wondering what your thoughts are of a health savings account, an HSA.
Uh-huh. I like HSAs.
Does that sound?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it takes the... It can potentially can be the best part of a traditional IRA and the best part of a Roth IRA together.
Yeah, an HSA, and I'm not an expert, but you know, I know something about it, Gene, so let me explain it a little bit to the listeners. Health savings account is a type of an investment account that is set up with tax advantages. In other words, you don't have to pay income tax on that money you put in it. You can invest the money. But the money is used to pay for health costs that you have ongoing or have over the years, okay? And I don't know what the limits are. Gene, maybe you can help me if you know. I think
I can tell you. I've had a HSA for 7 years now. For an individual, it's $3,350 per year. And if you're 55 or older, you can add one more $1,000 per year.
Okay. So that's how much you can
put
away. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. For a family, I believe it's $6,500, around $6,000. I forgot the exact number.
And I think it's really good for young people, because young people are healthy, and they generally won't use that money until you get older. Then you need it. You know, maybe you need it then. So I kind of like the whole concept, the HSA concept, Gene. So, yeah, you got thumbs up for me for it. Okay.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Gene. Appreciate the call. Thanks for listening out there in North Carolina. I'd really appreciate that. HSA, health savings accounts. And, you know, it would be nice if they would increase them. And, you know, it's all about politics, as we all know. But it would be nice if they increased the limits so you could put more money away, you know. But, again, it's all about policy. We never know. Have you given up on American manufacturing? Actually, U.S. companies are manufacturing more today. GE created 10,000 new jobs with many more expected as they build new plants in the USA. See the whole story in InvestTalk recorded webinar called New America. You can watch it anytime when you're an InvestTalk insider. Sign up for free at InvestTalk.com.
If you have a question about our talking point today, how to keep more of your ETF gains, there's a link to a related article on our webpage. Or you can send a note. To do that, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin, and they will get back to you.
Hi, this is Jeff, and I am calling from South Florida. I'm a podcast listener, and my question is Boeing. Is this a buying opportunity? How do you think this stock is going to do in the future? Thank you.
Boeing Company, you know, they're only two worldwide manufacturer of big commercial planes. As Boeing here in the United States is the main one. The another one is the European company. What's the name of that company? The European company. I don't buy either one, airlines. This is not my thing. But Boeing manufactures commercial and military aircraft, missiles, information communication systems. They're an $85 billion company. Their sales are slowed and 2% in the most quarter. Remember, they're selling big planes. So their sales come in bunches, and it's hard. It's one of the reasons why I have difficult buying. Boeing is a great company. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying. They're going to make $8.49 this year, $9.51 next year. Their P.E. is not unreasonable at 16. They should have a market P.E. of about 15, but that doesn't mean they're that expensive. The stock has traded sideways for 2 or 3 months now, pretty much what the market's been doing. They pay a 3.3% dividend, and that dividend is solid, and it would only increase in time. They're not going to shrink that dividend. Return on equity is huge at 76%. So that's good, but they also have a lot of debt, so that helps the return equity, so it kind of offsets it a little bit. I like Boeing as far as a core holding blue chip. I like to buy it when it's on sale if I can, and I don't think it's on sale. At the same time, I don't think it's overpriced that much either. I would wait for a nice pullback. If you can get it for the like $105, $110, I'd feel much better about it. And it was there and in February, so it's not that far back that's the number it was trading at. So right now it's just a little bit expensive, not hugely expensive, just a little bit expensive to me, Boeing, BA. So I wouldn't buy it right now. 888-99-CHART, four things that will drive stocks higher. Remember, I've been trying for several months now to make sure I balance negative with positive information about the stock market. I think the stock market is overvalued, okay? But valuations are high, just as I think, but maybe a lot of money is sitting on the sidelines. All the value investors, a lot of them have a lot of cash sitting on the sidelines. That's good for the stock market. That's like ammunition ready to be fired at stocks. So there's one of the four things that could drive stock higher. Earnings. Now, you heard me how bad the earnings have been the last, five quarters? And even this quarter, Q2, is earnings for the S&P 500 is going to be down another 5%. That's the fifth quarter in a row earnings will be of down. But how long will that stay up? Maybe we're now looking at the final quarter. Maybe we'll finally start seeing some growth from a lower level of earnings that we've been dealing with for over a year. That might be positive for the market. Remember, I'm talking about four things that will drive stocks higher. The economy, we have 1% GDP growth, right, in the first quarter. The second quarter should be better, but only modestly so, not great, and maybe that'll keep the Fed from raising the rates. The Fed leaves them alone. Remember, they left them alone the most recent quarter. Yeah, they could leave them alone the rest of the year. And finally, the presidential election. As we get closer and closer and closer to it, once it gets behind us, we won't have to worry about it anymore. We, meaning the market, won't be worrying about it anymore. That is good for stock prices. So those are four things that could drive stocks higher. Notice not one of them was the Brexit. See, I think the British leaving the EU or not, I don't think it's going to be that much of a impact. Are they not going to have trade with the rest of Europe anymore if they leave? Of course they will. Or, you know, just be different. They'll have to renegotiate their trade pacts. Okay, they'll do that. See, I don't think it's as bad or as good staying in or leaving. I just think it's, I think it's going to just make some volatility in the short term, but not do much in the long term. That's what I think. I got two more talking points here before the end of the show, so hopefully we can get to them. Let's get back to the 24-hour listener line. Anytime you want to call, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, this is Kyle calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. I listen to you via podcast. I have a question about a Mazor Robotics. Ticker symbol is MZOR. I was wondering if you think this might be a good long-term buy, maybe even the next Intuitive Surgical. Thanks.
Intuitive Surgical, okay, that's kind of a stretch. And this is Mazor, M-A-Z-O-R, Mazor Robotics, develops surgical guidance systems and complementary products used in the orthopedics and neurosurgery fields. It's a $405 million company, so it's very, very, very small, microcap. And the answer I would give you would be no. It probably is not going to be the next Intuitive Surgical. It received, well, that wasn't the news. Something drove it up just recently. It was $10 a share in May, and today it's $19. So there's been something that's going on. It's probably sales. Sales, you know, growth last quarter was 53%. The most recent quarter was 42% growth. But they've been like that. They had 29% shrinkage and then 96% growth. Sales are only $6 million, and it's a $405 million company. $6 million. And so the price to sales ratio is very, very high. $6 million a quarter, $24 million in a $405 million company. That's a pretty high price to sales ratio. There is no PE, and this is why I don't like it. They haven't made money ever. So this is one of those, take a high risk. Cash flow is negative. High risk stock. Management only owns 7%, so they don't own a ton of the stock. Again, it's moved from $10 that it was at, you know, most of the last 8-10 months, and then in May started to take off. Something happened. I don't know what it is. I'd have to read it and find out. But is it going to be the next Intuitive Surgical? It would be highly improbable. I don't like to buy companies. Remember my rule. I don't buy companies that don't make money. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. And we have time to get your question in before the hour's up. 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART. (888-992-4278) 50% of all high-paying jobs require this knowledge or skill. And I'm not talking about just sitting at a computer. I'm talking about computer coding knowledge or skill. Coding. 50% of all high-paying jobs require it. Do you know what SQL means? Java, JavaScript, Python? Do you know any of that? See, I know Java and JavaScript, but all the others, I'm just passively aware of. But in the future, you kind of have to know this stuff. You have to know it. My Justin knows many of these things in our office. And Jason, the other registered investment advisor in the office, does too. You kind of have to know these things because, you know, this is the future. So if you have children, make sure they get some computer skills. I'm not just talking about learning to play video games. That's not computer skills, okay? That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking knowledge and coding. Knowledge and coding the computers. Okay, 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So let's answer another text question before the hour is up. When you say this stock will lose 50 cents this year, do you mean that the prediction is to lose 50 cents by the end of the year or 50 cents over the next 12 months? For instance, in June, will it lose 50 cents from January to December of this year or from June until next June? So when I say this stock is going to lose, okay, That's the question. When I say that, I say, okay, this stock is going to lose 35 cents, which I just said on Mazor Robotics. It's going to lose 35 cents next year. It's going to lose 42 cents this year. That means for their annual reporting period, okay? Not every company doesn't report 12 months from December to December. I'm basing, the numbers I'm picking out are from a piece of software that I buy, and it's their annual income. Their fiscal 2016 year, they're going to lose 42 cents. Next year, their annual fiscal 2017 year, they're going to lose 35 cents per share. 35 cents per share. So if their fiscal year runs from the end of the first quarter to the end of the first quarter next year, that would be 2016. So it depends on the company. I can't tell you exactly where their fiscal year ends, but it's for that major part of that year. Their earnings are for their fiscal year. Okay. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. One last talking point, VIX, the volatility index. What is it trying to tell us? What is it trying to tell investors? And the reason why I'm talking about it is the VIX had a huge spike up, pretty percentage-wise, in the last few weeks, okay? Spiked up. That usually means fear is high. And if you remember right, the market fell, but only fell about 3 or 4%. Remember, over the two-week period? And now, so the market, the VIX got really scared, but the market price really didn't reflect that fear. Now, the market nearest new high, and the VIX is still fairly high. You would think that with the market going up, the fear would fall back down to the level it was before, the 2 weeks before it spiked, about a month ago. It would be back down there. It's not. It's not even halfway back down there. Like 30, 40% fall, meaning fear is down from the high. But what is it trying to say by this unusual movement, not necessarily even relatively close to the overall market? I think it's telling us that the experts, the professionals, the smart money, they're uncertain about the market still. Even though it's near new highs, they're still pretty uncertain about where it's going. It might be because of the vote coming out in Britain, but I think it's overall, they're uncertain about the economy, they're uncertain about a lot of things, and I think that's what it might be telling us. But we'll see. Only time will tell. Time to close it up for the day. If you'd like to schedule a portfolio checkup with me, I'll be in San Ramon for these individual retirement reviews on June 28th and San Jose on the 29th. To get on the schedule, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. Love to meet you. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today. And let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.